You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 26 April. Bank of Japan leaves rates unchanged at 0.1% after Tokyo CPI came in better than expected. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Mia Krichler from Kruger International, the Clix results, and of course that proposed takeover of Anglo American by BHP Group. Michael Jordan, co-founder and chairman of Bank Zero, on the recently introduced deposit insurance in South Africa and how this could shake up local banking. And thoughts from me on share price volatility in the US as earnings are released. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial service provider. Morning headlines from CNBC. US GDP growth slowed to a 1.6% rate in the first quarter, well below expectations. Business Day, factory gate prices see more upward pressure from food and fuel, higher than expected rise in producer price inflation for the month of March. Morning markets, the US was red, S&P down 0.45%, NASDAQ off 0.55%. Over in the East, it's mostly green, the exception, Sydney down 0.2%, Tokyo's up 0.4%, Hong Kong 1.8% higher, and Tencent up another 2.3%. Commodities, mostly green, gold, $2,345, Brent, $89.32. Platinum, 931, and palladium slipped 995. Rand is 1904, Bitcoin 64,400, and top 40 opening call looking for a green open, 460 points or 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Mia Krichler from Kruger International. Mia, appreciate the early morning time. Clix results out yesterday, decent numbers. I mean, they got some revenue growth, HEPS a little bit better, dividend a little bit better, so we get that leverage, margin expansion, but a tough environment for them.
Yes, no, Simon, this was a great great set of results as we're accustomed to from Clix. They did have everything you said was on par. They had a great half year. There were some struggles though on their distribution side, where they've already put money in. They're trying to improve the distribution business, but unfortunately they haven't been successful in retaining two of their larger clients, and they are working on getting new clients. So that's been a part of the business that's been earmarked for future growth that has been sort of struggling. I wouldn't say struggling, but in terms of the rest of the business, dragging in the past 6 months. On the retail side, which they've cautioned is the area of concern going forward, with the South African consumer being under pressure, uncertainty around how people conduct themselves in election years, which we normally find to be more conservative, less sort of prone to spend money they don't have in often cases, they have actually done the best. So their retail side of the business, where they've onboarded some new businesses in the past financial year, which is the Body Shop, Sorbet, GNC, etc., have actually done particularly well for them and grown above the overall growth level of over 12.4%. So that's a strong growth, as I've seen on the retail side. Yes, overall, I mean, they still have a lot of cash on their balance sheet. This puts them in a very fortunate position where they can actually expand their business at a higher growth rate than they've done over the past couple of years, where they've planned to open over 55 new stores in this full financial year. So normally they've sort of aimed just below 50. And this year it's going to be over 50. They're trying to bring a pharmacy to every single store. And they've really broadened their footprint in their business to service areas that they haven't focused on in the past. So they're moving out of only the higher LSM groups to sort of a broader range of exposure in South Africa to service everyone and a larger asset or a larger customer base rather. By going into local areas, local malls, and trying to put a pharmacy into all of those businesses of theirs.
Yeah, 900 stores hit this period, and they're targeting longer term 1,200 stores, which is pretty much a clicks everywhere. Quick point in it, the one thing that really, the one line was retail margin expanded due to strong growth in higher margin private label products, which tells the story of a consumer under pressure, but also tells the story of clicks just almost in a sense sort of catering to that consumer under pressure and benefiting from it.
Absolutely. And I want to add a second line that sort of is the kicker for me in these results. And that is the fact that they've returned 2 billion rand to shareholders in dividends and share buybacks over the past 6 months. That is a staggering number. And I mean, since 2006, they've already returned over 19 billion rand to shareholders. So this is really a business that that is working for a shareholder. In South Africa, we don't have that many options any longer on the JSE. This is a great company and that has been doing very, very well in portfolios for investors.
Yeah, I'm actually wondering what the market cap was in 2006. It was probably about 19 billion. In other words, they've given it back to you more or less. The other, the big story yesterday, of course, was the announcement that BHP Group wants to buy Anglo American, excluding the SA assets of Anglo Platinum and Kumba Iron Ore. The price kind of comes out at 600 rand a share. There's a lot of moving parts in that because it's an all share deal. The market pushed Anglo up to the around that 600. Your take on it, it seems maybe a little bit cheeky. I mean, you're buying a decent asset, and of course, this is mostly about copper, kind of at the bottom of the cycle.
Absolutely. I mean, this is what opportunities are made of. So we've seen that the market has actually valued Anglo now for more than the offer. So Anglo closed yesterday at 611 Rand, and that was up over 18% on the day, which shows us the market actually don't believe that these assets are valued fairly by BHP, which means that we could start seeing other entrants into this offer broaden. And I mean, we know this is a massive deal. This is the largest deal since 2013 that we would, if it progresses, that we will see in the mining space since Glencore Extrata. We know of that deal that happened in 2013. But it was very clear that this is all about the copper assets, majority copper. Of course, the iron ore, everything outside of South Africa looks attractive to BHP. And that's the real issue here. And that's sort of the elephant in the room that we've been discussing on the show in many occasions, is that the South African lack of infrastructure with Eskom, with Transnet, makes it so difficult for good mining houses like Kumba, like Anglo Plat to get the assets out of the country, out of the ground, out of the country, that these players like BHP are not interested in these assets. So they want to spin that off to the shareholder. They want all the rest of the assets, which includes very good iron ore in Brazil and, of course, copper, which is a major, major point going forward with renewable energy, battery technology, and where the world is moving to. And that is where Billiton comes, or BHP rather, comes in now. BHP, of course, has a stronger balance sheet. They've got higher margins. They're very cash flow generative. So there's a lot of benefit also to all these extra assets within Anglo that could potentially be brought to sort of higher yielding assets than they currently are. So interesting deal. I think there's a space for this, and we'll see how it progresses. But it's still a far way off from anything very
pinned
down.
Yeah, I take your point. And I think it was telling. I get why they don't want Anglo Platinum, PGMs. They don't do precious metals. But not wanting Kumba, which is a high-quality iron ore mine, fits with their iron ore in Western Australia. They like, thanks, but no thanks. We'll leave it there. Mia Krekler, Kruger International. Always appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today. That offer, is it cheeky? Would you support the deal? Would you perhaps support the deal at a higher price, maybe? Some folks are saying 700. I mean, does Rio Tinto come? There's been talk that maybe Rio says, hey, if Anglo's on the table, we've got 700 bucks a share. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Michael Jordan, co-founder and chairman of Bank Zero. Michael, appreciate the time today. Corporation for Deposit Insurance, a bit of a wordy title, but in essence, deposit insurance has arrived in South Africa and individuals are now insured for up to 100,000 rand in case of a bank going bust.
Yes, it's a big moment in the development of the South African financial system. We've had a very robust banking system. It's actually very highly regarded in the world. At the World Economic Forum, we're typically number one. But we've had our share of bank failures. There was a mini bank crisis in 2008. And people will still remember the failure of African Bank, for example, and more recently of VBS Bank. Now, what that means is that depositors have always been quite careful to whom they allocate their life savings. And typically, there's a preference for big banks. People think big banks are too big to fail. And this has made it tough for smaller banks to compete. But that has all changed since the 1st of April because we now have this formal deposit insurance scheme in South Africa.
I want to talk about how it's going to shake up banking, but quickly some mechanics. I mean, my sense is, for example, VBS, ultimately the government stepped in and paid up to 100,000. So there was a bit of insurance, but of course, that's taxpayers. This will be paid by insurance from the banks, from the fees, which of course they may just pass back to us anyway, but it's not going to be government responsibility anymore. This is the crux of it.
Simon, that's exactly right. We've arguably had an implicit deposit insurance scheme to date in the sense that small and nearly by definition less sophisticated depositors have been bailed out. But as you rightly put it, that has been ultimately at the expense of taxpayers. And that's not what you want. And that's the reason why nearly every other G20 country already has a deposit insurance scheme. And South Africa is a bit late to the party, but thank goodness we're there now. And yes, so banks will have to pay a levy based on the deposits that are covered. It's a small levy. It's 0.215% a year. You know, it's not negligible, but, you know, that is the estimated risk. And that then goes to the deposit insurance, to CODI, the council, which will then administer this. And it's therefore self-financed by the banks, which is the right way to do it.
And you made a great point. If I'm looking to open an account, one of the things you always worried about, because as you mentioned, this is your hard-earned savings, you're worried about that bank not being there in the morning, which means there has been a natural inclination to kind of move to the big banks because they're the too big to fail. They've been around for hundreds of years. This suddenly makes the smaller banks, you know, Bank Zero and many of the new recent entrants into the space, a lot more attractive, and we're going to potentially see some good shakeup.
That's exactly our view. So we're very, very excited about this because it effectively means that all customers, and this isn't just retail customers, but it also includes nearly all businesses and corporations, as long as they're non-financial, they can now look for the best bank, you know, whether that's the ease of opening an account, whether it's low or zero bank fees, whether it's great service, and of course, great rates. Mm-hmm. And you know that 100,000 rand per depositor per bank will be guaranteed by the scheme. So we expect a lot more competition, and we think, you know, customers are now going to go to the innovative banks that gives them the better deals, not just the big ones.
Yeah, I take your point, absolutely. And one of the things, and this is data from Saab, who says that it protects about 90% of depositors, in other words, the vast majority of our population. But of course, that's only about a quarter of actual deposits because there's a skew towards some of the wealthier. We might also see folks just having a couple of multiple accounts just in case. I know someone who was a victim of the Silicon Bank in the US last year, and fortunately they had that, so they were able to make payroll on the Monday morning.
Yes, all those figures are exactly right. The scheme has been deliberately constructed in such a way that 90% of depositors by number will be covered, even though by a random amount it will be less. Mm-hmm. Because obviously some big corporations and professionals that have really big deposits, they too will probably apply diversification in any event, you know, spreading the deposits across the various banks. That's just good risk management. But you're quite right that individuals and other businesses can now do the same for smaller amounts, up to 100,000 rand per institution. So you really should see, and this is what has happened in other markets, that money that used to go to just the big few banks, let's say South Africa has a big five, is now far more likely to be shopped around, including to the smaller banks.
And there's some innovation here as well. And you refer to them as Bank Zero. You refer to it as a members of a club, which could be a stock file. And a lot of stock files are really small. Truthfully, most stock files are unbanked because the big banks just, and I've spoken with the stock file associations before, they can't manage the process. They're just not ready for it. But the way you do it, it's each person in that club's an individual. So suddenly a stock file, it makes a huge amount of sense.
That's exactly right. So this is a large phenomenon in South Africa. It's how people save very, very often through stock fails, but they haven't always been protected individually. You know, so a stock fail on its own could go up to 100,000 and be protected. And that's the way we understand it will work with most of the banks, unless you individually identify every single member of the stock fail, which is something we do at Bank Zero and can quite easily do because it's all based on cell phone technology. So every single member of a stock fail is now not only gets updates when they want on their phone, but is protected by this deposit insurance scheme. Yes.
An important point here is that this is now automatic. I've got money in a bank account, and as of 1 April, it is now protected. I didn't have to do anything. I don't think I've had a notification from my bank, but it just comes in automatically.
That's exactly right. So you don't have to do anything. You don't have to pay anything extra. You can just sleep a little bit better at night.
A question, and maybe there isn't an answer to this. Why is this happening only in 2024? I mean, it just, you know, you mentioned the banking run in 2008. I remember Sumbo, which was around 2003, more recently VBS. We haven't had a lot of collapses, but it just seems to something which makes intuitive sense for a banking industry.
It makes intuitive sense. As I mentioned before, it's a facet of nearly all developed banking systems in the world. We are one of the last, if not the last, G20 member that has done this. It has been talked about for many, many years. Actually, yeah. I can recall even 30 years ago, you know, the research started. It started more in earnest about 10 years ago. I suppose one could say there are people who are, you know, less positive about it because they don't need it. But certainly for us as a small bank, we're very, very excited about this because it certainly changes, if not the actual risk that people had when they were banking with Bank Zero, it would definitely be the perception that they now have. And basically, the whole range of banking options and competition and innovation is now available to them without having that extra worry of, you know, will my savings be safe?
And I take your point. It's not fundamentally changing the risk, it's perception. And perception is, I mean, so much about money is around perception. A last point, the one thing South Africa does have, and it gets talked around a lot, is that we have a strong and innovative sort of financial services sector very, very broadly. Truthfully, what we've really seen in the last couple of years with the lack of Bank Zero and, as I said, other entrants into the market, we really are pushing boundaries in the banking space. And I don't mean risky boundaries, I mean innovative boundaries.
I think a lot has to do with the smartphone. First cell phone, but now the smartphone. You know, the percentage of people who buy them is increasing all the time. They're becoming cheaper and cheaper. It's the way that we're leapfrogging many industries in the world, but banking is typically one of them. You could argue that there's even a battle out there, not between conventional banks only, but between conventional banks and telcos who have wallet type of technology. And then you have these new challenger banks like Bank Zero and others who are coming in. They don't have the traditional cost structure that old banks have. And yet the new customer does everything they do on their phone. We wake up, it's the first item that we reach to. It's probably the last thing we put down before we go to bed. And, you know, if you had to start a new bank today, you wouldn't do it with branches and with massive head offices. It would just be a cell phone challenger bank.
Yeah, I always say those legacy banks with 150 years of history, it's a proud history, but it also means somewhere in the basement, there's a ledger they have to keep up to date because of that. We'll leave it there. Michael Dodon, co-founder, chairman, Bank Zero. Appreciate the time.
When you stay invested over time in Stanlib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management at the helm, your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Some thoughts for me on US share price volatility, particularly as earnings are released. And of course, in the US, earnings are a quarterly circus. In South Africa, it's twice a year, interim and final. In the US, it's every 3 months. It's just a continual wave of results coming. Just this week, we saw Tesla up some 15%. This after they missed their guidance and expectation. The market was looking for about 50 cents of earnings per share, and they got 45, yet stocks up 15%. We had Meta off 13% on some really chunky numbers. Those were good numbers from Meta. But these sort of moves in the US around results are not unusual. A 10 or 20% up or down day when the results come out is, in large cap stocks, I mean, it's almost become par for the course. Now, is it bots? Is it algos trading? Is it institutions or private clients panicking? I don't know who it is, but certainly it is a lot of volatility. And the problem is, for you and I, it's easy for us to panic. It's easy for us to see Meta down a whole bunch and look at the price rather than the actual data and decide that Meta's completely blown it and that we should get the heck out of Dodge. As always, be careful of price and be particularly careful in the US. In South Africa, it's not so much. I mean, Capitec was up a little over 7% earlier in the week on results. They were strong numbers. Sasol down some 11% on a very weak update. But these are more the exception. You know, Clicks moving a couple of percentage points after results. Yes, Anglo, big day for Anglo, but that really was all about the announcement of a potential takeover or firm offer coming from BHP Group. Point is, with those US holdings, the extreme moves are more often just noise. And that's why I say, careful of knee-jerk responding to that noise. Rather, do it the old school way. Go and check the numbers. Heck, read the results. More than often, the advice is, don't panic. Normality, from what I've observed over the years, typically returns in a few days. And if the stock is quality, the uptrend will absolutely continue and it'll carry on going and ultimately in time make more highs. So perhaps if anything, this volatility is maybe opportunity for us as well. But the key point is expect it, and when it happens, don't panic. Go to the source, which is those results. That's it for today. I was chatting with Corinne McKinnon yesterday from Uber Home Loans. We're talking about the rising trend of intergenerational living in South Africa. We asked you, are you living in an intergenerational household? Just over half said, nope, single family home. Around a quarter said, yes, you are, and you're finding it difficult. The rest said, yep, you are, and it is working great. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m., podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome rating in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again Monday. We're going to be talking all the details on the U.S. 10-year bonds.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.